When you download photos, software, and new programs, your computer may start to slow down over time, which means you have to as well. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're going to talk about getting your computer back up to speed and what you should do to keep it that way. And Pete is a great guy to help us with that. He's an independent computer consultant, provides great information and resources at his site, infostar.com. Pete, great to have you back, as always.
Always great, Larry. Thanks.
And, you know, we've all experienced this, I think, where your computer starts to take forever to load programs, websites, and whatever else you're trying to do. And maybe first, why does a computer start to slow down over time?
Well, you know, there's a variety of things that relate to that. Sometimes it's a bad decision. And sometimes, you know, bad decisions equate to whether or not to do a system update or upgrade. Sometimes it's a bad decision not to have antivirus or malware. Yeah. And then just you're being at risk at large, you know, to whatever you do online, including just receiving emails from family and friends, because sometimes their emails get infected because they're at risk.
Yeah.
So, you know, that all equates to, you know, bad judgment, bad decisions. And, you know, how to deal with that. And sometimes things are forced upon us and we don't have a choice, which is in the case of Windows 10 not being able to, you know, decide to reject an update.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with all that? Well, you do some due diligence. You do research. And I learned the word due diligence when I worked for an accounting firm for a brief period of time. And it's basically taking the time to do the research to understand what you're about to get involved with. So, for example, Apple just released an update to their operating system called El Capitan, which is an update from Yosemite. Is it worth doing? Well, research it and see, does it really, number one, you may be at the end of a life cycle where your hardware will no longer be supported, and you may want that update, but Apple will say, oh, you're done, because we no longer support that. That will happen. So don't be surprised with things like that. The other thing is go out there, research it, and see some feedback whether or not it makes sense to do it. And how do you do that? Well, the first place to start is Apple makes that available through their App Store. So look for reviews. Look at some feedback for what people have to say. Start there. Then do some searches with your favorite search engine, whether it's Google, Bing, Yahoo, whatever, and just look for some forums and discussions and look at what the reaction is to actually doing that kind of update. Because I've seen people have problems where they do that and they get very frustrated. Things don't work.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, taking the time to figure out whether or not you need to, you know, do that update path. The other is getting some useful utilities. So, like, we've talked about this over the years, CCleaner, which is something you can download for free. There are purchase versions. The free one works well, where you fix your registry. You get in a Windows environment, and this is for Windows, where you get rid of registry problems where there are programs no longer installed on your system, but your system is actually thinking, hey, do I have to deal with this or not? So cleaning up your registry is a good thing, and sometimes you have to do it multiple times.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. Wiping your drive clean, the free space, or defragmenting it so that it's clean. Because when you delete a file, it's not really deleted. What happens is the computer operating system actually makes that stealth to you, but it's really still there, and there are utilities that can actually recover deleted files, and they're freely available out there. But when you wipe it clean, they're no longer really
there.
You can get them, but it requires a lot more effort, and you may, you know, if you're desperate, there are ways, but, you know, we'll leave it at that. Rebooting your system periodically if you leave it on, so if you leave it on all week long, and you load programs and you close them down or you leave them open all the time, shutting your system down will help make it work better. So that's something very easy to do. In a Windows environment, resizing your recycle bin so it doesn't take up 25% of your drive space and bring it down to like maybe, you know, 1 or 2%, because we now have larger and larger drives. So you don't really need all that space allocated to just the recycle bin. In Windows 10, the restore is a little bit more dynamic, but the restore function can also be resized in the Windows environment. And then, of course, like we mentioned earlier, malware. So either something like Malwarebytes or Avast or AVG or Housecall or something, but at least have something on your system that is scanning incoming email and, you know, being some kind of barrier to your, you know, an intrusion getting in on your system.
So lots of good tips there. And you do all that, and you're probably going to have a faster running computer.
It's probably going to be a lot better. And then there's one more thing is the things in a Windows environment, the load in the system tray, when you start up your computer, all these colorful things are in the lower right-hand side. There's a way to limit those. And what you would do is you'd hit start, and then you type in msconfig. So it stands for Microsoft Configuration. So msconfig. And then you hit the enter key, and then there's a tab that says startup. And what I tell people is if you can do it on your own, write down what is checked. And then when you uncheck, see how it reacts. And it takes time because you have to reboot your machine. And if you want to be even safer, unplug your system from the internet and see how things work unplugged. So in case you think you're shutting off your antivirus and you don't want to go unprotected, you're not hooked up to the internet, so you won't have an issue.
Peter Green of InfoStar.com, our guest today. Thanks so much to him, and thank you for listening in. We have, I think, one open line. Lots of folks have already called in. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. And Dan in Gladstone, Michigan has been waiting a bit, so let's go to Dan. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I got a computer about 3 years ago, and it runs on Windows. I got it with Windows 7. It's not an official name brand, but it's CyberPower. It's an official gaming computer, so it's not what I would consider an off-brand computer. But we've had trouble with it for probably the last 3 or 4 months. It wants to update, and then once it goes through its updates, it says that it cannot complete the updates, reverting to original status or something like that. And then it'll shut off and take like another hour, hour and a half, reverting to its original format. And we've tried bringing it back to an earlier date. At one point, even the earliest one that we could find on the list. We just can't seem to get rid of that problem.
Have you tried running a utility that's part of the operating system called ScanNow?
Yes.
You have? And did it come back and say that anything had to be fixed?
No. It's not finding any errors. And then I ran a browser AVG scan as well, and that's not coming back with any errors. I didn't do what you were just talking about, is the registry thing. That I don't know if that would be helpful or not.
You can try that. Was there any kind of error message or code from Microsoft in terms of, you know, that it was having problems, other than just telling you it was reverting back?
No, it's like during the startup screen. At this point now it says, you know, we've got like 124 updates that it's trying to do. And after it says it's downloaded the updates, it restarts, goes black screen, comes back on, and it attempts to install them, and it says failed to install, reverting changes. And then it restarts and goes back to being able to run for the next 48 hours.
I've run into that before. What I usually end up doing is I go out on search. I use Google for searching, and I look for, you know, an approach to how to deal with that. I don't really like reformatting the drive and reinstalling the operating system. It's a lot of work. So I always try to see if there are other alternatives before I go and do that.
Right.
So, you know, in the event that you have to go and reinstall it, you know, make sure your things are backed up not once but a couple of times so you have more than one option to try if you need to restore data. And then also, of course, you know, getting your program, sometimes you need installation keys and things like that, so that can kind of be a pain. So make sure those are all identified, and also that you have access to the software. So I usually go out there and I look and search on forums, discussion forums. And if you go to infostar.com and then go to the Virus Info Center page, on the very top part are some forums that you can, I believe it's on that page. I haven't used mm-hmm. that in a while. The Virus Info Center page and also my TechLinks page, there's a search facility there that will allow you to search. And I actually plugged it into using Google for all of the tech areas that apply to mainly Windows. There are some Apple mm-hmm. resources out there. So what it does is I'm pointing it to search through the tech resources rather than searching through all of Google. So more than likely you'll get a hit on something that you'll find useful. And there are some tech resources out there that you can sign up for free. And there are also people that are called MVPs that are Microsoft people that are specialists in operating systems and in programs.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they're part of some of those discussions, and they share some insight in how to approach that.
So if you go there to infostar.com, the TechLinks page.
TechLinks in the Virus Info Center page.
Okay.
I believe it's the Virus Info Center page, and the very top has got a search bar. And that's how that works.
So go there, Dan, and good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of Infostar.com, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're taking a look at your computer and how to keep it from running slow, among other things, with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Thanks for joining us. Call in 800-642-1234. Post on our Facebook page. Have a question, you can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of the page. And Christy and Hazelhurst up next. Christy, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have an Asus laptop that we got in February of 2014, and with Windows 8.1. And sometime in August, I believe it was, we did the update to Windows 10. And everything seemed fine, a little different, but everything seemed fine. And then I would say about a month ago, it's also a touch screen. A month ago, the touch screen disappeared. You couldn't, it was just, you know, regular computer. You couldn't touch the screen. It didn't work. And I went through the troubleshooting in the hardware. It came up telling me that I have an unknown USB device descriptor request failed, code 43. They stopped it for code 33. I went through the process of fixing that, and the touchscreen came back. And so this has been going on for the last month. It'll go for a couple of days. The touchscreen will disappear. I'll go through the process of fixing, the troubleshooting part. And the touchscreen generally comes back. Yesterday, it went out again. I went through the process multiple times. The touchscreen did not come back. And then today, I went through the process again, and the touchscreen is back. So I don't know if they're related to each other or not, but I was wondering what you think.
Hmm. Have you contacted Asus?
No.
You might want to contact them and make them aware, because you've upgraded your system to Windows 10,
mm-hmm.
and they may have, because it's interacting with the hardware.
Okay.
There may be some kind of firmware update that may have to happen.
Okay.
Because it sounds like, you know, you're doing everything right, but it keeps losing it, mm-hmm. and it could. I mean, I've had a variety of devices fail, not just computers, but computer-related devices like routers and switches and things like that fail, and they actually need the firmware updated in order to make them work properly.
Okay.
So, you know, when I see flakiness yeah. like that, it tells me there's something going on between the software and the hardware, and with as much as you've tried, it's either firmware or there might be something that, because all this stuff is electrical on-off switches,
okay.
there might be something loose in your computer hookup.
Okay.
Typically, the screens are like with these ribbon, very thin ribbon cables.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take a lot for them to be off. But with all the stuff that you've done with the software and it going, working and then not working, something tells me that, I would contact the manufacturer, especially with the Windows 10,
okay.
and see what they have to say about that.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks,
good
Christy,
luck.
For calling. That's very good advice, I think. Jan in Oak Creek, it's your turn. Hi, Jan.
Yeah, hi. I have a question for you about Windows 10. I had my old computer. It had Windows 7 on it, and then I put in Windows 10. And then when I go to down to the left-hand corner and hit the little 7 settings window, it comes up settings, and I go to and I click on settings, and it just flashes like a window, and then off, and then it's back off again, and I can't get to the settings anyway, and I tried to get them to a different route, and it does the same thing.
Hmm.
So what's the deal?
Have you tried right mouse clicking on it to see if you can change any properties or anything?
Yeah, I have, and I can't do it. It doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Hmm.
It doesn't work.
Well,
if I just do it on the, you know, that window that comes up that says, you know, comes up from the bottom that says settings, if I put right mouse click, it just says pin to start and pin to taskbar,
right.
and that's all.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I haven't specifically seen that, and Windows 10 hasn't been out that long for me to see all of the little annoyances
yeah.
with it.
But
not to say that you're not alone. So what I would do is I would search that and, you know, put in, you know, that you're, you know, attempting to change the settings and it flashes and see what comes up, because I'm sure you're not the only one that's having that happen.
Okay.
There are ways to, there was with the Windows 7 website to actually interact with Microsoft, and you could go to the Microsoft website and look under support, and there are ways for your computer to interact with their resources to offer, you know, some kind of troubleshooting fix to it.
Right.
It's not to say that it always works, but at least it's an option to try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of calling them up. But
yep.
You know.
Give it a shot. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Jan. And, boy, Margie in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi.
Hi, good morning. The issue with my computer over the past week or so, I'm looking at the email. I have a Microsoft, I have a PC. My server is AT&T. Now, over the past week or so, what's happening is at the very top or the very first area where the emails come in, there are these ads that are popping up. And they seem to alternate American Express, LendingTree, and something called Simply Safe. And then after that, underneath the title of the ad, it says sponsored. And the question I have is, how do I get these off, and how do I prevent them from coming back? I cannot either right-click or left-click on those ads. If I do that, the delete button goes away, and I get the symbol, the circle with the bar through it, over the delete. So I cannot get rid of them. And what do I do about that?
So what are you using for bringing in your email? What application, what software are you using?
That is the Yahoo.
So you're using Yahoo.
Yes.
So Yahoo is web-based email. And what you're seeing is their way of keeping their service free.
Okay.
There are probably settings in the Yahoo Mail as related to advertisement.
Okay.
There's also, because it's also web-based, which browser are you using? Are you using Internet Explorer, using
yeah.
Firefox? Okay. In Internet Explorer, I'm not sure exactly where the setting is, but there's a pop-up blocker, which can be related to advertisements. So you may be able to control that. Google has a toolbar that you can download that also has that feature as part of it. So if you did a search for Google Toolbar, T-O-O-L-B-A-R, there's something like that that you can download. But it sounds to me like what's happening is Yahoo is sending you emails, or not emails, but ads that are basically, you know, part of their free Yahoo Mail service. Now, you could switch to something like Google Gmail, which does not have any advertisements. So that's an alternative. I know it requires you changing your email address, but a lot of people, Google Gmail is very popular. So people wouldn't be surprised if you actually changed to it.
Okay. And if I were to change to Google Gmail, mm-hmm. would that keep all of my current emails in there, or would all of that go away?
What you can do is you could forward those emails to, well, I haven't specifically made a change from Yahoo to Google, but I know that you could set up your Gmail account and probably forward things to it from the Yahoo and, you know, just basically have it, if you want to call it, imported in to Google Gmail. You just have to try that. I personally have not seen that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have not
done
that.
You should be able to do it.
But you should be able to do it.
Okay, so these things are considered pop-up. And I did have some direction here to go to the Internet Explorer and mm-hmm. go to the securities. Mm-hmm. And then what I did was I did change one of the prompts on the display to enable. In other words, I thought that would get rid of these, but, mm-hmm. but it hasn't done that. So that didn't work. Do you think if I were actually to contact AT&T, because they're the server, that mm-hmm. they could do something on
Yeah,
that?
They might be able mm-hmm. to do that for you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Otherwise,
you could also go to Yahoo, and they have like a support or forum area where, you know, people talk about these things. So you could do a search on that, and
you're almost surely going to find something on.
Yeah, how to eliminate pop-up ads with Yahoo Mail is what I would put in.
There you go. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Tom in Whitewater, up to you now. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Hi.
I am finding increasingly on my PC, I'm getting a message that says a script on this page may be busy or it may have stopped responding. And I'm given choices of continue, debug script, or stop script. I also have gone into the history that I have for Firefox and have seen that there will be messages that are repeated numerous times before I delete them. I'm wondering what's going on and, you know, what's the explanation for this?
Yeah, the scripts you're seeing, I believe I've seen them too. A lot of them are Java-related. Sometimes it's just an error that was made by an exchange between your website and, or not your, by the website that you're browsing in your browser. So sometimes it's a hiccup, and sometimes it's an actual program error that needs to be fixed. So if it's something that you're going back to and experiencing over and over again, it's either an update that's not right on your system, or there's actually the website is having a problem, you know, running the script. So there's some incompatibility going on. Sometimes I, you know, say continue, and then I look and see how my computer responds, and sometimes it responds better, and then sometimes it doesn't respond. So then I end up rebooting it and, you know, look and see if there's an update to apply. There are a variety. What's happened with the internet and the web is it's become very multimedia-like, very interactive, and all the websites out there use a variety of products to interact with our browsers. So whether it's Silverlight from Internet Explorer, Java, JavaScripts, Adobe Flash, the list can go on and on. Those are some of the problems that you're seeing. So even in advertisements that are on pages can have script problems.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had Tatiana shot us a note. My MacBook Air keeps telling me to delete files, so I deleted 1,000 files and all of my music, and it's still full of other, whatever that is. What's the best way to free up the other stuff that's taking up almost 40 of my 60 gigs?
Wow. You have to go on a search and find mission where all that space is being taken up. There's music.
She took all the music off.
Took all the music off. There could be pictures.
She took away 1,000 photos. She may have, if she's got 1,000, she may have had many thousand more, but...
Yeah. There's usually a user folder, and in that user folder can be a number of temporary files in that,
So go to the find user. Where would you find user folder?
Well, if you click on the hard drive for your Mac.
Sure.
And then user, that's where you're going to find, you identified as the user, and there might be things that you've actually inadvertently put in some of your folders without even knowing it.
Good point.
And it also depends on the programs that you're using on the Mac, because what I've noticed recently on mine is I have a lot of free space, but it'll give me a message where it says, hey, you have no free space. And I tend to leave my Mac on for an entire week before I shut it off. And I think what's happening is some of the space is being taken up by, I'm suspecting, iTunes, with it interacting online with Apple. I have no idea what Apple has in store for me, but I think it wants me to look under the hood more as related to it, because it's the only thing I could suspect that's working at, eating up my storage.
It keeps telling me to go there, too. I get messages all the time like that.
Yeah, so I think there might be some interaction with iTunes that might be taking up space as well.
And a comment from Dan, this goes from Marinette, this goes back to an earlier call. This is, he suggests RKill and TDSKill, programs that attempt to terminate known malware processes so that your normal security software can run and clean up your computer infections. So he recommends RKill and TDSKill, programs that will terminate, or attempt to terminate at least, known malware. So,
sounds good.
Yeah, worth
looking into and trying.
You betcha. Jay in Two Rivers, your turn. Thanks for calling, Jay.
Good morning. Hi. I'm wondering how effective the Charter security suite is. I've got Charter Internet, and they're very bad email, but I've got others. I just don't use the Charter email too much, but they've got antivirus and various other things loaded into the security suite. That's my first question. And then I've got two identical printers that had worked just fine with my old computer on XP, and I upgraded to a good Lenovo with Windows 10, and my if I'm printing off of the internet, let's say every other space is offset, so the print or every other paragraph is not real readable. Now, if I print off of, say, a document that I've got on the PC, then it's okay.
Hmm. Have you, when you install those on your Windows 10 laptop, did you get updated drivers and so forth for the printers, or did you just install them straight?
Yes, I did get updated drivers, though the printers are about 10 years old or so, and there are some features that it no longer has, like ink level.
Yeah. I was going to say, depending upon the age of the printer, sometimes you have good luck and bad luck with how they interact with newer versions of the operating system, especially with web pages, because the web page, the size of a web page and the browser is different interaction with the printer than something like, you know, a Microsoft Word or a word processing program, where there are defined boundaries and page setup. Even though you can do some of those things, the web browser page is not a defined 8.5 by 11 sheet. It's it's a little bit more in flux than that. To answer, so what you might want to do is you can do some research online and see, you know, how your printers can, you know, are they compatible with Windows 10? You know, look and see if other people are having issues, because you might be fighting a battle that you can't win.
Sure, I could go to one of those forums.
Right, or you know, contact the manufacturer and see if they have any known problems or any suggestions as well. Mm-hmm. They might have a simple setting change for you to do.
Yeah.
So that's worth looking into. As far as, you know, Charter Security Sweep, I haven't used their products. It's not to say that they're good or bad, but they will offer you support, obviously, if you're using them. They're going to be a line of support for them. You might want to look and go online and do some research on that and see what kind of feedback people give, you know, as related to using the Charter Security Sweep.
I've read variable feedback. That's why I thought I'd see if you had any more detailed info.
So you've seen good.
I appreciate your help today.
Yeah. So you've seen good and you've seen bad is what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It probably has some strong points and probably has some weak points.
Yeah.
And if it's got strong points, use it for the strong stuff and then, you know, get something else for the weak part.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot for calling, Jay. Appreciate your call. And Ray in West Allis, on to you now. Hi, Ray.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Thank you for all your excellent guests.
Thank you.
I have a comment about an earlier caller who said they had trouble running updates.
Yeah.
When I was still running Windows 7, I had a similar problem that my .NET framework updates would not install, no matter what I seemed to do. And I'd run Malwarebytes, and I'd run McAfee, and wouldn't find any problems, and then it wouldn't update. And I found, by poking around, I was so frustrated, I was determined to do something, and I went into the... I considered uninstalling the .NET framework and reinstalling it, but I found that by right-clicking on the .NET framework in the control panel programs, that there was an option to rebuild it, which then solved the problems, and then all my updates ran right through. And it's been running like a champ ever since.
Wow.
That's a great suggestion. The .NET framework he's referring to is what Microsoft uses to actually deliver a lot of the internet and web programs. It's kind of like the behind the scenes quarterback.
So again, Ray, explain what you did.
I went into the control panel.
Yeah.
And I chose programs, and in there is a list of programs, and you can sort them. I sorted them by alphabetical order.
Yeah.
And then I scroll down to, I think it says Microsoft.net. Or Windows.net. I'm not sure exactly what it's called in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I right-clicked on it, and you had the option of uninstall, modify, or I think rebuild. It was one of the options. And I chose rebuild. And apparently there was something broken in my .NET framework, because after it rebuilt, all my updates now run exceedingly quickly and successfully.
Ah, wonderful.
That would also probably explain why the scan now check didn't find it, because it's actually interacting with the Windows operating system and not some of these add-on things that came.
Yeah, after. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ray.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, very much appreciate that. We always get good comments. You know, that's one thing. If we're
it's
we got a family of people out here that are listening and commenting, and it's wonderful.
I like the part listening, because, you know, there's a difference between hearing, listening, and then when you listen and you actually oh, maybe I have something to help with and contribute.
That's perfect. Rosie in Minocqua, thank you. What's on your mind?
Hi. Sorry I came in a little bit late, but the lady who called about the issue with the pop-up ads and trying to get rid of that.
Yeah.
My easy solution was to, and by the way, I found this by just Googling, how do I get rid of Yahoo pop-ups? And the answer for me was to switch over to Firefox browser, and then they have the add-ons that are available. And the one that is called AdBlock Plus works a charm. Never seen a pop-up since. And I actually find Firefox to be a much better browser, much safer. It says, get me out of here if I'm in some shady web page. I don't know about whatever. But it was that was the beautiful part of it. But it was all just down to, and I did just find it through Google. So if she just Googles, get rid of pop-up ads. A lot of people say use Firefox and do the AdBlock Plus add-on.
Great suggestion.
You're a peach. Thanks, Rosie. Yep.
Welcome. Bye.
Appreciate that. Well, here's another perfect example of what we get from our listeners. Mac and Clover, your turn. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I just wanted to share something that happened last week. I'm using a Lenovo laptop. Came with Windows 7, but I've upgraded to 10. And 10 has been great until last week. It did one of its automatic upgrades, rebooted a couple times, and when it came up the final time, several things wouldn't work. And I've never seen this in 20 years of computing. But, for example, the scroll wheel on my mouse changed the icon size on the desktop from big to little. Back and forth, and ultimately changed the whole layout of the desktop icons. Then I clicked on a program, and it opened Windows Explorer, the file manager. And then I right-clicked, and it was the whole properties, the address of where that icon was supposed to go was wrong. And what the heck? And I was about to give up and go back and just do a restore. And I thought, well, I'll try the old standard and just reboot it once. And when it rebooted, it came up and everything worked fine. So I just thought this is something that somebody might run into. And it's bizarre, but it does go away if you just reboot.
You know, there's so, Mac, thank you. There's so many times just rebooting.
Yeah, when something acts flaky, rebooting is a good thing. I use that all the time. What's interesting is the effect of the scroll wheel on the mouse increasing and decreasing the size is a function that's normal to Windows. If you hold the control key down and play with the scroll wheel, you can increase and decrease the size of a lot of Windows programs. So if you want to see something that's bigger, or if you want to increase on a web page and make a picture look bigger or print look bigger, you hold the control key down and then the scroll. And there's a trick to doing that on a laptop. You put your finger down and then you move your finger up and down and it'll change the size. So something got stuck.
Stuck in there.
Yeah.
For sure. Wow.
Yep.
You can join in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Talking with Peter Green today, computer consultant with Infostar.com, that's his site, about getting your computer running either faster or just getting it running. I'm Larry Miller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Net as we take a look at your computer with Peter Green of Infostar.com. Join in. The number, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Love to hear from you. Jerry in Shell Lake posted a note and said, I used to do a complete backup of my BlackBerry every week and I found out I was making a complete copy of all the files instead of just uploading the new files for my computers. Just wanted to warn people to be careful that they are not backing up repeated files that can take up a lot of space.
Well, you know, backing up devices and backing up computer files, there are a lot of really good backup utilities, but you have to take the time to work with them to see if you're doing a full backup, and then you change from a full to something like an incremental backup, which is only the changes that are occurring between the last backup and, you know, if you do it each day or once a week. I would recommend at least each day. But, you know, examining those backups and seeing if you're getting what you expect you're getting, you know, if your files are actually being backed up, whether it's picture files or music files or documents or whatever, examine your backups as if you were going to restore them. You don't have to restore them, but you can go to the point where you're actually going to attempt to do a restore and see if those are the files that you really should be backing up.
How do you, somebody wondered about this, how do you back up a system? I mean, what's the process?
You install, well, there's depends on the system. If you're using Apple, Time Machine is with the computer, and you could hook up a thumb drive, or you could hook up an external drive, or it could be an internal drive, and you can back up to those devices, and you can, it'll run several times a day. You can also edit the configuration for it so it just runs at a certain time, but there's a utility that does that that you'd have to download. Microsoft has its own backup facility, plus it has the restore feature, which is just working with the operating system and programs that are installed as part of it. And then there are other utilities that come with external drives, or you can download utilities. You could go to like CNET.com or just do a Google search on some of the backups. And the one that I like using, I'm not endorsing, I'm just saying I like using it, is it's called Macrium, M-A-C-R-I-U-M. It's been around for a while. They make it for networks and they make it for individual computers. And you can download trial and check it out. And you can schedule backups. You can tag the files you want. You can exclude the ones you don't want. Because if you're backing up in Microsoft, if you're backing up your user folder, it'll ask you whether or not you want to back up hidden files. So there are a lot of hidden files in Microsoft. So, you know, there's some decisions to make with that. So that could take up a lot of space and take up a lot of time as well. But the general reaction is you can run these things during the day while you're using your computer, and you don't really see much of a change in performance.
There we go. Patrick in Greenfield has a question, so let's go to Patrick. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Pete. Thanks for taking my call. Hi. I've got a situation where my mother-in-law's computer, it's a laptop running Windows 7. Every time it reboots, it will pop up with a magnification window, and I'd like to get rid of that.
Hmm. When you say magnification window, is it a program?
Well, I think there is a program on Windows that says magnification.
Okay.
I've gone there. It doesn't have any switches to turn it on or off,
mm-hmm.
So I don't know how it got on to begin with.
Sure. Well, if
go ahead.
If it keeps coming up when you reboot it, what you probably want to do is type in msconfig.
Okay.
And then you hit the start button and type in msconfig, hit the enter key, and then the startup tab. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, just, you know, write down what those, you could either do a print screen of it using Paintbrush and save it that way, or if you mm-hmm. have to scroll down, you know, just write down what are all the programs are and what's checked, and then look and see if you can find the one that looks like it might be the cause of, you know, this magnification, and then mm-hmm. uncheck the box next to it, and then you'll save it. It'll ask you to do that, and then you reboot your computer and see if it goes away.
Okay. I'd gone to the startup program, and it wasn't there, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are things that might be tagged in their startup tab of the operating system, and they usually put them in the system tray. So
okay.
You might not always see those in that folder or where you were looking.
Well, thanks.
Yep. Yeah, should be a quick fix, hopefully.
You know, the other thing I wanted to mention about backups is the cloud services that are out there. So those work well, too. And those, what's nice about those is the backup is actually off-site.
Yeah.
So if something happens to you and your backup locally, you have a means of actually logging in online and recovering that. And usually those, you know, you run them later at night so that you're not on your system and you know, you're not bothered by it. Because you're susceptible to your internet connection then.
Mm.
So if you have a slower internet connection and you're copying files, it's going to take longer than if you're copying directly to a hard drive or a thumb drive. There's a difference in performance.
Tony in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I just got sort of a new printer. I mean, it's new to me. My sister-in-law gave it to me. It's an HP, and it says it has a wireless thing for it. And I can't get the wireless to connect. My my router through Time Warner has got a password on it.
Mm-hmm.
The printer doesn't have a keyboard on it.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, it has a USB port, but it doesn't have a USB port. And I talked to my sister-in-law and checked with her, and she assured me that her router had a password on it. I've talked to Time Warner, and all they could say was, well, you need to get that password in there. Mm-hmm. Any clues as to what I can do?
I have an HP wireless printer at home. And basically the concept is the router that you have is broadcasting a wireless signal that you have a security setting, which is your password. So the HP printer, in order to be part of, you know, the network environment, has to have access to that router with the security setting being the password. So you might have to go online and look, you know, type in your HP printer, but there is a way for you to program that printer with the password setting for your network. So you have to identify that printer to your network, but it has to be able to be let through the gatekeeper, which is the router. So without that password, they can't talk to each other.
Right. I just can't figure out how I can talk to this printer because it
doesn't
seem to connect to anything on it.
Yeah, if it's an HP wireless printer and it works, you know, in other words, there's not an issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like a malfunction, you should be able to go online and you'll find specific instructions on how to do that for that printer.
Okay.
Yeah,
everything I've tried hasn't worked that I got offline, but I'll do some more poking.
There's usually software to download for your computer, and there are usually questions that need to be asked, not only for your computer, but usually it's done also with the printer as well, that you have to key something in. They, you know, they give you the specifics on how to, you know, put in your ones and twos and A's and B's and so forth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, the problem is there's no pad or anything on the printer itself.
Hmm.
And although the manual says there's a USB port, where the USB port is, there was a little tab from the manufacturer across there with a circle through it and a diagonal line, you know, indicating there's no USB port.
And
I've looked and looked, and there is no USB port.
And you said you got this from your sister?
My sister-in-law.
Your sister-in-law.
And she had used it for 3 or 4 years.
But did she use it wirelessly?
Yes.
And she was able to get it to talk to her router?
Right. Huh. She said her router had a password on it.
Hmm. There has to be some way to plug into that that
printer gotta be.
To talk to it. So if you're hooked up with your there's no USB, how could you hardwire plug into the you have to use a USB cable then to talk to the printer. it might allow you with software to talk to that printer to make the changes. So you have to go online with HP with that, you know, specific printer number.
Model number and everything.
See what you need to do. There, I'm sure there are, you know, instructions that step you through that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. There just has to be something from them.
Especially if he said his sister-in-law was using it.
Well, yeah. If she used it.
Yeah.
Unless they're not on good terms and she's trying to drive him crazy, which
it could be.
I suppose that could be a problem, but
that would make an interesting setting for some movies, you know, with how I want to drive people crazy.
Oh man. Well, we got lots of things we can talk about here today, and lots of people online too. Peter Green of InfoStart.com, our guest today, talks with us regularly about my personal computer problems and yours as well. And he's always great to have you call in with your questions, or you can shoot us notes on Facebook or on our email address. Email address is talk@wpr.org. Phone number is 800-642-1234. And our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And we'll be back with Pete right after this look at the news. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, taking a look at your computer today with Peter Green of InfoStart.com. He's our independent computer consultant, always happy to help you with your computer problems. And this time of the program, Pete has some great ideas, typically, about where we can go on our computer to find cool things. And what have you got for us today, Pete?
I've got a lot that's related to energy, because mm-hmm. I'm right now working on building my first house that I've ever done. And it's been an interesting process. And you can find all these if you go to InfoStart.com, the top left, you go to the current top 10 or today's archive, or to the archives, and then go to today's date. So the first one is, people probably know this one, EnergyStar.gov. But if you haven't been there, it's got some useful references, and I put a link there to the recommended insulation levels for all the different parts of the country. And that's kind of a neat thing to just look at because we're in the cold zone.
Mm-hmm.
The number two is usgbc.org. That's for the U.S. Green Building Council, and it's made up of a very diverse group of builders, environmentalists, just a whole bunch of great people that contribute to helping us build better and build green. Inspectapedia, InspectaPedia.com. So it's a free online encyclopedia about building and environmental inspection. Something that you don't really consider too much, but waterproofmag.com.
Mm-hmm.
Great resource for waterproof information. And why would you want waterproof? Well, it's a house and there are different parts that really need to be waterproof. Yeah. Buildingscience.com is another great resource. Number six is energyauditingblog.com. So it's a blog that is posted by someone that lives in Maine, so also a very cold environment, and just some very interesting and I found useful information there. Green Building Talk is another popular forum site for talking about green building. ConcreteConstruction.net, and that's a magazine for the concrete industry. And some people put foam insulation in their under the slabs, and some don't. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of good information about that. And then going back to technology, ghacks.net. So it's ghacks.net is a technology news blog that's been online since 2005. And those are not familiar with what a blog is. It's basically someone that has an interest in a topic that is posting what they feel to be useful information to share on an ongoing basis. And since 2005, we're looking at least 10 years, so that's pretty good. And then, I don't know who won the World Series. Did the World Series end yesterday?
It did end yesterday.
After seeing the Packers go through what they did, the last website is worldseries.com. I'm from New York. I couldn't, you know, when I saw the ninth inning in that game, I'm a Yankee fan, but a little bit of a Met fan. And I got a lot of relatives that are Met fans, but that's
well,
the way it goes.
Well, they tied it, Kansas City tied it in the ninth on
yeah,
a
I
wild
saw that
play.
Part,
oh, you saw the
Yeah, I saw that, and then I was like, oh, my God, again.
In the 12th inning, they won, scored five runs.
Yeah, and then watching the end of the Packer game, it was a tough night.
It was.
Pete had a tough night.
You're not the only one. Believe me.
But anyhow, WorldSeries.com is a site that's posted by Major League Baseball for the Fall Classic. So,
and my daughter is a huge Brewers fan and a huge baseball fan, so that I'm sure we'll be looking at that one. And those other sites, I've been to, but not all of them. And the ones I've been to, you're absolutely right. Those are great sites. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good information there.
And you can, if you really do the research, you can save a lot of money with insulation, but you got to do it right. So, for example, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've done the research on this, and I've looked at Canadian information, I've looked at research from universities, and I'm about to cement underneath a slab, and what I've discovered is that you don't need to use the pink board, which is 2.5 times more expensive than the white, and I'm using a vapor barrier, I'm using 15 mil thick, which is qualified and spec'd out as an actual vapor barrier, and not 6 mil thick, which is not a vapor barrier. It's a vapor retardant.
Yeah.
And I'm in an area close to a marsh, and I'm concerned about moisture. So, the 15 mil is an important part. And the white, 2-inch thick white foam, which is, I believe, extruded polystyrene. It's expanded polystyrene, not the XPS. Mm-hmm. Is going to be above crushed rock, and the R value is only two different. It's R8 versus R10, but it's just having it there. The R value of the two, you know, R10 versus R8 is not that big a deal, but it's saving a lot of money.
There we go. So,
if someone's out there, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've done a lot of due diligence on that.
Oh, man. Jan and Lodi, you have a question. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't know if my problem's a PC problem or I have DSL through the telephone company or if it's through the router. But a lot of times when I put my computer to sleep and then I reboot it, or not reboot it, but I get it back up, I cannot access the internet without troubleshooting what the problem is. You know how there's the bars for the internet in the lower right-hand corner? I get that gold star. Mm-hmm. And then if I right-click on that and I troubleshoot, it's always fixed. But this might happen 2-3 times a day. And I'm not at home, but I get something about the cable might be broken to the router. Mm-hmm. And when I call the company, they say it's a computer problem. And then when I try to have the computer people look at it, they say it's a router problem. So I don't know where the problem is.
What I would look at is in your... It's a Windows machine, correct?
Correct.
Okay. What I would do is go into the control panel and look at the power settings and see. And you could also look at the device level, too. Are you hardwired in or are you wireless?
I'm wireless.
Wireless. You might want to check and see if the setting for your wireless network adapter is being turned off.
Yeah, I've done all that.
You've done all that.
Okay. And actually, what I've noticed is when, you know, when it's gone to sleep and then you click the power button and you get the welcome screen, if I wait like a minute and then click enter, I've always got the internet. Mm-hmm. But if I go too fast, could that be a problem?
Yeah, it is. It could be.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes, you know, what I was going to suggest and what you just mentioned is if you find a way that works, stick with it. Because some of the things, you know, when they're connecting to each other, it's sometimes a sequence in which they connect, and sometimes it's the space and time in, you know, that lapses that allows them to connect and sync up. So if you do them too fast, it can skip a beat and then things start missing and then things don't work. So if you found a way that works, I would stick with it.
Yeah, I've tried that for the last two or three days, and it's been great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Stay with it, Jan.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Probably didn't want to wait that extra minute, but you know what? Sometimes you got to.
You know, the computers, when they're trying to talk to each other, they're handshaking. And if it's asleep, and then you're waking up and say, hey, go to work right away, and maybe it's rubbing its eyes and, you know,
sort
scratching
like
its ear
in
the back of the head. And, you know, it says, hey, give me a break. I need a little bit more time to talk to my buddies out there.
There we go. Well, that's Jan and Lodi. What about Jan and Madison? Hi, Jan.
Hi. Thank you for answering.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question regarding the AVG security.
Yeah.
I have had that on, and it's been successful. I have Windows 7. Just recently, they keep coming on saying they want to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go through it, it's fine. And then a screen comes on that says that if I continue, then they want to be automatic all the time. And previously when I did this, they took over my homepage. So I'm not sure if it's necessary to do those upgrades.
I probably would stick with doing the upgrades, especially with antivirus, because the thing with antivirus protection is it's never truly 100%. Because there's always someone out there trying to get through the barriers that these, you know, programs like AVG, AVAS, and so forth create. And if you don't keep things like that up to date and you think that you might be, you know, susceptible to having somebody send you a bad email or, you know, visiting suspicious websites or being pointed there, if you have your guard down without doing the updates, then that's where the problems happen.
Okay. Is it usual, though, that they will change your homepage setting when they, you know?
No, that's not. Usually they ask you a question if you're going okay to allow them to change your homepage.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And you can say no.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. The other question I have is that is it usual to put something else on there for security besides AVG? And what would you suggest?
The program Malwarebytes works well for a lot of the they named it because of malware. I would say AVG is more towards viruses and worms and Trojans, and malware is along the same lines, but some of them are outside of the boundaries of what AVG works, and it might work well to have both those on your system. They do interact well together.
Okay.
So
how to get to that, just type it in.
Yep, malware, and then BYTES.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I think we've talked about that product on the air. Someone mentioned it like probably, I'm guessing 10, 15 years ago.
It's a long time. Yeah.
And it's a pretty solid program, and they have a free version that's available that works well too.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks a lot, Jan, for calling.
I think I even remember I used their product. Their free version used to have a thing called File Assassin, which actually would allow people to delete stealth files.
Yeah.
So once you could get pointed in the right direction and you actually found it because it was hidden, you could use this program called File Assassin to get rid of it.
Larry in Whitewater has a question. Larry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, it's been wonderful listening while I'm waiting. First of all, I haven't been following the New York team since the Dodgers left. I'm surprised you still have the heart to do that. And second of all, if you're going to build a house, there are two old books that are wildly interesting. One of them is Ken Kern, The Owner Built Homestead, and the other one is Rex Reed, The Engineered House. And they both have things you don't find anywhere else. They're both outside-the-box thinkers, and you should enjoy them.
Hmm, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Well, outside of that, I've been using Linux. I wish everybody would and put Microsoft and out of business. But Linux is such a wonderful free program. But I've been having trouble lately with a wandering cursor. And it could be that the latest Linux I downloaded was goofed up, or it could be I'm thinking a virus or something. Do you have any recommendations for virus or malware programs for Linux?
So what's happening with your cursor?
I'll be typing something, and all of a sudden I'm four lines up and to the left, not in a regular manner. And it gets pretty infuriating. I'm not leaning on the touchpad or anything else. It just floats.
Did you say you did a recent update to it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. You may want to look and see if there's a problem that was related to the update for that.
Yeah, I could reboot the update. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But are there malware and virus that you know good programs for Linux?
I don't know offhand if there are any. I would say that I would not be surprised if some of the companies like AVG and Avast offer them, because they do offer those for Android phones, which is
Linux.
The Google operating system on the phones.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they made theirs available for Linux as well. And to make a comment about Linux, and we've talked about this also over the years. When I used to sell accounting systems, there was a program called SEO Xenix, which is a version of Unix or Linux. They all come from Unix.
Yeah.
In fact, Apple's operating system is Unix-based. They changed to that. It's a great operating system. I could multitask on a green screen and hotkey between accounting applications. It was awesome. But everybody wanted Windows. And then
I don't know, it's 64-bit. It downloads, it looks just like Windows now. I mean, you've got the screen to go into the system command line, but there's no difference really. I mean, except for the price.
Yeah, but the thing where the shortcomings are, and you have to do your research, and again, it boils down to what are your needs, goals, and objectives of using a computer. Finding the software and then finding the hardware. If you're an everyday user where you're doing email, you're doing web browsing, you got some simple word processing needs, some simple spreadsheet needs, and I'm sure there's a basic accounting program for you for home finances and stuff like that. Excuse me, and you're not really doing anything more than that, Linux works great. If you're into desktop publishing or doing
gaming,
well, not online, depends.
Yeah,
on gaming.
Depends.
If the gaming environment is supported on Linux, then it might be a viable solution. But my point is, you've got to find what your goals and objectives are, find the software and then the hardware. And the Linux operating system may not support those things that you need to be using the computer for. And in that case, for me, it became, what are my clients wanting to help with?
Yeah.
I know computers, but what are they wanting help with? So it becomes Windows and it becomes Apple.
Yeah.
And then it becomes, how do I connect all those computers together? Well, I want to network Windows computers. How do I get Apple computers talking to each other? And for a long time, that was not a good solution. They were all a lot really standalone.
Yeah.
And then Apple improved on that and so forth, and that's where we are today. So that's how you make your decisions on what is the best operating system to use. It's what do you want to use your computer for, find the software, and then the hardware. And if it's Linux-based and it works, great.
Yeah, perfect. Thanks, Larry, for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Ken in Green Bay a chance to join us because he has a comment on on the magnifier problem, I believe. Ken, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I had this problem a long time ago, and it's really a simple checkbox. You go into the control panel, appearance and personalization, the ease of access center, that's the key, and make the computer easier to see. You have a checkbox for turn on the magnifier, and I suspect that he has the box checked and he needs to uncheck it.
Sounds right.
Oh, thank you, Ken.
Awesome.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Just here, there's another good one.
Sometimes, if you haven't been there, it's hard to find.
And Scott in Rockford, hi, have you got a quick one?
Yeah, I have a Windows computer, and I have an HP all-in-one OfficeJet printer.
Yeah.
And at least once a week, they don't talk to each other, and I have to go and uninstall the printer and then reinstall the driver.
Who's the printer by?
HP. I've gone to HP numerous times, and they basically do the same thing. They uninstall and reinstall.
Yeah. How about the router? Who's the router by?
Belkin.
Belkin. Have you checked with Belkin, see if they have some compatibility issues with them?
I have not.
Yeah, you might want to.
That
sometimes
may be the problem.
Sometimes there are compatibility issues with manufacturers, you know, in terms of flakiness. So you may want to see if they have a known, if they've know of a known problem with that, or if there might be a firmware update or a software update.
Oh, it could be updates. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Because they do make updates for those available.
Okay.
You know, just because you get to buy a router and it works, it doesn't. For some reason, it does not guarantee that it works all the time. And it could actually be a firmware update that they make available to fix something like that.
Okay. I have one other question, quick one. I've been on the waiting list to get Windows 10 download.
Uh-huh.
What is it? But they say I'm not scheduled yet. Do you know anything?
I do not know. I guess, you know, it's a free download, and I'm sure their servers are getting taxed. I'm using it on my system, and it seems to be working fine. I don't know if I was one of the earlier adapters and lucky at getting it, but I would just you could probably call Microsoft and ask them, you know,
hey, could you put me up the line?
Yeah. Or, well, okay. Ask them if there's an issue with, you know, or how long the wait is.
Yeah.
Because I have not researched to see how long, you know, you have to wait in queue to actually get your download, but it's not a I hope you have a good connection. I have an 80 meg download connection, which is good.
Yeah.
But if you have one that's slower, it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah, there you go. And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Pete, thank you.
Always
appreciate
great, Larry.
It. Yeah, it's always great. We'll look for your next visit.
That's the beginning of December.
Yeah, December 7th.
Pearl Harbor Day.
Pearl Harbor Day. He'll be back. And hopefully we'll have some... And I'm sure we'll have some good information for you about your computer. Tomorrow at 11, we'll talk about the co-author of After You Hear It's Cancer, a book that helps patients make informed decisions. And then at 11:45, we'll learn about the relationship between a guide dog and owner as we talk with the author of Come, Let Me Guide You. Thank you so much for listening. It's been all the great programs. It's always great to have your comments and great questions. And stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.